In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. It's just Tim today again. John, we got to talk about adding my name to the song because this is enough. I mean, it's getting out of hand. You keep just ditching me and letting me do this thing on my own, and I just feel like I need to at least hear my name with the music. So there it is. John's a busy guy right now. We talked about that. He's actually had to move this weekend. So the last couple of days have just been chaos. I'm going to guess he hasn't slept very much at all. I haven't heard too much about it, but I'm sure he'll update us all when he's back, hopefully on Wednesday. But in the meantime, let's do another throwback episode. So if you guys listened to my solo episode the other day, you know that I mentioned the Marty Baron interview as kind of one of my first ones. I think it was the first one that I was actually in on. Maybe that's what made it so special for me. But he's also a great guest. He had these amazing stories. We talked about some of the Torch ones already, so I'm not going to hammer that in too hard. But we have, I mean, Marty Baron, he was drafted in the first round and a couple of injuries came in and he had to make his NHL debut at age 18 in Pittsburgh in the old Mellon Arena against Jagr and Lemieux in their primes. He let up 4 goals in the first period. So how's that for a welcome to the show? They also talk about playing cards on the plane and some of the different games they played and how good John was at it. And I think John supplemented his income with some of that money. And even like, you know, Marion Gaborik in New York kept the game going because he didn't care how much money he lost because he was making so much. He just kept putting in, you know, hundreds and hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars more just to get back in and try to win. Baron is pretty, he's pretty open and candid about when he knew it was time to retire. I think his second to last game was the day that Thomas Hertl scored 4 goals as a 19-year-old. Including the one between the legs that he scored on Baron. So that was kind of a cool story. I think he said he played one more game and then he knew it was time for him. And then what's it like to play, you know, alongside or behind three of the greatest goalies to ever play the game? Obviously, Dominik Hasek, arguably the greatest of all time, but certainly in the top three with Brodeur and Waugh. And then Ryan Miller, you know, coming up ahead of him, maybe grooming him a little bit. Not that Miller probably needed a ton of grooming. And then finally finishing his career behind Lundqvist. I mean, talk about just an absolute legendary trio of goalies that Baron has played a big part in their success. And I'm sure they played a big part in his as well. So it's a great interview. There's a lot more in there. This interview took place, I think, May of 2019. So it's been a good 18 months since this was first released. And at the time, it was only episode 40, and now we're at like 170 or something crazy like that. So it's been a long time. I thought we'd revisit this and give it another listen. And so without further ado, here's Marty Baron.
Even though sports had a break, your business did not. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. The lack of quality candidates for jobs is remarkable, especially with these kids going through university thinking they're the cat's meow. They think they know better than anybody. It's important to have a company to help you find that candidate. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world. Because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and they'll see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. So go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Football is back in full swing and the Bills are 7-2. Tim, can you believe that? It's the Pats records right now. What are they? 2-6? They're horrendous. But football is back, and you might not be at any of the games, hopefully not any of the Pats games. You might barf if you see it, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sports book experts. Hey, Marty, Tim's here too, your best friend you've been texting with.
What's up, Marty?
Yeah, Tim and I are on, people are asking me, who are you texting to? I'm like, yeah, it's just Tim.
I know, it's funny. I'll give people, Marty or Tim, numbers of friends that I know, and he just like, 2 weeks later, he'll call me. He's like, yeah, you know, I was just talking with Marty Biron or this guy or that guy. Like, he just takes advantage of liberties. I don't think he should.
You know what? That's good. And then next step is he's going to be like, hey, I'm in Buffalo. Can you get me a couple tickets? And that's what it's going to be.
No, he's going to be all over you. He's not going to stop. He's really
No, I'll play it cool. Don't worry, Marty.
I'll put a block right after this recording. I'll put
Please
a block
do.
On it.
Please do. He did write a lot of interesting questions for you, Marty. Like a lot.
Oh, good. I know the feedback on Twitter. There was a lot of people that had some... You know, good stuff. So I'm looking forward to you bringing in some heat.
All right, Tim, go ahead. Tim's got the heat right here.
Well, we should officially introduce it.
I thought we already started, but yeah,
we
okay.
Can do some of it, but
hello, everybody, welcome. We're officially starting the interview with Marty Biron on Dropping the Gloves with John Scott. Marty, good afternoon.
It felt like we were talking for 15 minutes, and we thought we were. Full-time on the interview, and now we got to restart again.
Well, that's
I don't know
what happens.
I thought
we were recording. Tim ruins everything.
We'll use a lot of it. Don't worry.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways, thanks for coming on, Marty. I know you're very busy with your kids and your wife and all the other activities that you do with the TV and the radio and the podcast, and who knows, you probably teach. You probably do goalie camps.
I have too many jobs. You're right. I have too many jobs. TV, radio, here in Buffalo with the Sabres. I'm on the ice with the Academy of Hockey. Not as much as I used to, but and now hockey's starting. It's crazy. It's the first week of August, and my son's got practice tonight, tomorrow. He's got a game Sunday. We're full go in hockey now. So yeah, I got a lot of things going. But listen, I was excited when you reached out and you want to have me on the pod because. I've been listening, and you do a great job, so I feel honored to be on your podcast.
Oh, Marty, I love you. I had a question. Okay. This is not one of Tim's questions. You're on TV all the time, right? Do you – because I've done some TV stuff. I think I've even been on air with you a few times. Do you have to watch hockey all the time? Because I – don't like watching hockey that much. Like, is it tough to keep up with every single game every single night? Like, how do you do it?
I don't keep up with every single game every single night, but I do watch hockey every day. The key is you have to have a really good personal assistant, or in my case, a 14 or 15 year old son that likes to watch hockey. So when I wake up in the morning, he's already got a full hour of highlights. And he's gone on Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter and on NHL.com and TSN.ca and whatever. And he can give me everything that's happened. So all I have to do is sit at breakfast with my son and I know exactly what's happened the night before. But I do watch, and I used to as well, even when I played, John, I was watching games on non-game day. I kept up with the league. I always was fascinated with other players, other goalies, I love talking goalies and studying the goalies.
We're not going to talk goalies here, Marty. Sorry.
Hey, you know, I can tell a lot of lies, you know, but usually I tell everybody the truth. And I love the game. So when I retired, you know, I was getting tired of you know, your body is not the, you know, in the shape that it once was. But I always loved the game. So I figured I'd better get in the action right away, because I didn't want to step away from the game that far, and I'm right back into it.
Which is good. I feel like I loved watching when I was playing. It was great. I loved, like you said, keeping up and keeping tabs on people. But man, when I retired, I just felt like I needed to step away. I think I left on different terms than you did. I was like obviously controversial with the whole All-Star. Did you know I was in the All-Star game? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I was watching at home on my couch, and I was cheering for you. And man, it was like practice back in the old New York Rangers days where you were sniping left and right. And the only difference is I was on my couch. I wasn't in the net. So I felt very happy about that.
I remember the first practice with the Rangers. I got in early. I think I took the red eye there. I got traded to the Rangers from the Hawks at the deadline, like legit the last minute. So I show up in New York. I get there first practice. I'm winded and gassed and jet lagged. And I sniped on you and Lundqvist. I think my first six shots, I was like going bar down and post in and over the pad and five hole. And I was like, holy moly, like what is happening right now? And then obviously everything came crashing down, but it was a good first impression. Yeah. That was my first impression of Marty, just going bar down. Yeah,
maybe you should have done that more often. No sleep. Just go to practice, party all night. Like, don't worry about taking care of your body. That's all you were successful.
I know. I was too responsible. I should have partied more and slept less, I guess, in order to be successful. Kids out there, that's how you make it. Don't sleep and don't even practice. Yeah, I don't think Torts would have liked that. He would not. Anyway, so yeah, we wanted to hear some Tortorella stories, because I know you played under him for how long?
I played under him for about 3.5 years, and I love Torts. I'll be honest with you. I absolutely loved him. And my brother played for him in Tampa a little bit. And when I got drafted by the Sabres, John Tortorella was an assistant coach with the Sabres and coached the Rochester Americans. So I had a bit of a history with Torts going back. But I'll tell you, like, Torts's cardinal rule is you can never be late. And that is with meeting, practice. And if it's a 10 o'clock meeting in the morning, that doesn't mean the meeting starts at 10 o'clock. It means the meeting will start at 9:52, and you have to be sitting in the meeting room at 9:45, because if you're not sitting 15 minutes before meeting in the meeting room, you're late. And I think many times when you first come to an organization, you don't really know like what the standard procedures are. Are you having a lot of meetings? What about videos? Are they short video session, long video session? And with Torts, the number one thing everybody said is make sure you're on time. And on time means 15 minutes early. So that was my first reaction to it. And I mean, the reaction of players when they're late or when they're about to miss a meeting, it's the funniest, most scared the players have ever been when they know, like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be late for the power play meeting. And they don't want to walk in as Torts is speaking, and they basically just don't go in, right? They just hope that he doesn't notice that you're not in the meeting. So that was the first thing the guys told me when I signed in New York is don't be late, because he won't like that.
I like that, though. I think that's old school. I think that shows respect. Even to this day, I like to get places at least on time. If I'm not on time, I am like embarrassed. So I like that. That makes me happy.
Yeah, but you know what? It was funny is that I keep telling everybody the story how the guys were actually scared of Tortorella and being late. So one day, Brian Boyle, which is the nicest guy around, right? So Boiler is always on time. He works hard. He's the nicest guy in the locker room. And we showed up in the morning, and I don't remember if you were there, John, or not, but everybody was at the rink early. So on the board, it said 9:30 meeting. And so 9:30 meeting, you have to be in the meeting room at 9:15. And, you know, it's about 8:30, 8:45 in the morning. So, you know, everything's good. Boilers decides he's going to go to the bathroom and bring the newspaper, you know, his morning routine and whatever. Well, since everybody was there, you know, I think it was Ryan Callahan went to Torf and said, hey, can we move the meeting up to like 9 o'clock because everybody's here. So Torf says, absolutely. So without Boiler knowing that the meetings had been moved up a half an hour, he like, you know, everybody knew, but he was still in the bathroom and nobody told him. So me and Lundqvist were getting dressed to go on the ice. The goalies, usually we would go on the ice early. And Boiler gets out of the bathroom and he comes into the locker room and it's literally 8:55. It's not even 9 o'clock yet. So technically he's not late, but he knows that he's really 10 minutes late. So we tell him like, Boiler, the meeting's moved. It's 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock. And he's freaking out. Like he's going, should I go in? Should I not? And he's doing the dance in the locker room. And he's like a big man, 6'5", 250 pounds, whatever. And he's scared of John Tortorella and what that's going to do. So he goes, screw it. I'm going in. So he runs around the corner and he walks into the meeting. And before Torts could even say anything, he goes, I was on the shitter. I was in the bathroom. I didn't know it was changed. I don't know. Like just preamped, like just went at Torts. And Torts goes, okay, just sit down. That's fine. Like it was so funny to know that a grown man, a big man like Brian Boyle was scared for his life because he was going to be late in one of John Tortorella meeting. That was like, it was awesome. We still laugh to this day when we talk about that day.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Well, you never want to be late to me. I never had that problem. I was in one meeting, the team meeting every day, never in the power play, never in the penalty kill, never in the special teams, never in any meetings. They would write all the meetings on the board before every game. It's like, okay, 5:30 power play, 5:45 PK, 5:30 team meeting, or 5:50 team meeting. And I would just sit there and wait for the team meeting. And then I'd sneak in. And I was the only guy, which is embarrassing because usually every guy has like, well, I might get on the PK. I might get on the power play. And so I would literally be sitting with the backup goalie in the other room shooting the breeze. And then, okay, team meeting, they would open the doors and it would just be me walk in. Or if I was like sometimes they would dress 21 guys for warmups just in case someone got hurt during warmups. And so I would be like the extra guy and I would just like do my crossword and the meeting time, I'd come in and it's like sit there and not even listen because you're not going to play that night.
You say crossword, John, but I'll tell you, this is one thing like people always ask me, like, how is John Scott? Like, how was he as a teammate and all that? I say he was unbelievable as a teammate. But what people don't know is you are the king of crossword puzzle. We used to play like Words with Friends and, you know, the other one where you had to make like a bunch of 4-letter words like in a square or whatnot. And you used to absolutely like kick our butts all over the place. Like when I thought I'd have a good score, I'd have like 1500, you'd be beating me by like 3000 points. Like it was like insane. And I tell everybody, I'm like, yeah, no, he was a smart guy, like a college guy, an engineer guy, whatever. And you used to make us, especially the French Canadian, look really silly in those games.
Well, I tell people I supplemented my hockey income with my card playing because I would play cards with you guys. And I would literally just go home from every road trip with at least $500,000 cash in my pocket. It was great because you guys are all stupid.
Yeah.
And you would just think you were so good at cards.
A few shirts and a few vacation to the card game back in the days. It was me, Jay McKee, Danny Briere, and JP Dumont. And those guys would gang up on me and I didn't know what was going on. Maybe I should have asked for your help at some point because we used to play, you know, Snarples, we'd play like, did you guys ever play Screw Your Neighbor where it's like,
we played them down, all.
You know, we'd play Hearts, all these games and I'd lose and literally like the guys would feel bad for me. So they'd say, hey, just give me like, we'd call that a blue light, right? When they give you like a break on what you owe them. So yeah, it wasn't good.
They don't feel bad for you. Mr. First Round Pick, I don't feel bad for you. It's funny. I played with Gabby in Minnesota. And then we played in New York a little bit, and Gabby was he hated to lose, and he would show up on every plane trip with like stacks of cash. It was crazy. And he would always buy back in until he would win. And some games he would just be in it for like 2, 3, 4, 5 grand. I'm like, Gabby, what is happening with you? He's like, it's my money. I'm going to win. And he would just keep going until he won. And he, you can't listen. I was making league minimum and this guy's showing up with a bag of money with Louis Vuitton bag full of money. I'm like, I'm not going to win. It was just a losing battle.
Yeah, but then the guys playing in between, didn't they play post? Like,
that's what he would have all that money for. Yeah.
Stupid. Because they would be like, it's not a game of brains. It's a game of luck and when to bet. And these guys would be like ace queen. Like, okay, okay. Pot, and then they'd hit a queen, and we would lose a game like 5-2 in Columbus and fly to New York, and the plane would erupt like we had just won the Stanley Cup when somebody would hit the post. Like, it was crazy.
So for those of you who don't know, in between is you put two cards on the table, just say it's a six and a jack, and you can either pass or you can bet in between. And the card has to come in between, and just say you bet $10. If it comes in between, you get that $10. If you bet $10 and it hits the post, you owe $20 to the pot. If it goes outside, you owe $10. So the pot continually grows exponentially. If the pot's at $400 and the cards come two queen and you bet pot and you hit the post, you owe $800 to the pot. And so it grows rather quickly. So Gabby, he didn't care. So the pot would be at like $1,500 and it would come six jack. And he would go in between pot, and then it would come jack, and he would have to put $3,000 into the pot. And he didn't care, and he would just kept betting pot until he won his money. And so I come up, I'm like, I'll bet $20, and it's like a two and an ace. I'm like, $100, because I'm so super cheap. Anyways, whatever. Must be nice being first rounders. Okay, Tim, hit him with a question, Tim.
Yeah, Marty, I want to talk a little bit about your career. So you were a first-round pick, like John said. Like, who was in your rookie class coming up with the Sabres? Who were the veterans in that room that kind of took you under their wing? And I'm wondering, too, like, I think you were one of the youngest goalies to ever break into the league. So, like, did you have any starstruck moments being a kid just kind of breaking in?
Yeah, well, I got to play my first NHL game when I was 18 years old, and it happened by mistake a little bit. So I went to the Team Canada for the World Juniors training camp. I was an 18-year-old. We were in Campbellton, New Brunswick, I think it is. And I was one of the last player cut. The last four players cut were me, Danny Briere, Jay McKee, and Dan Cleary. And so I went back home and, you know, for Christmas break. And then on the morning of the December 24th, I got a call from Larry Carrier, who was the assistant general manager in Buffalo, and he says, Marty, we need you in Pittsburgh on the 26th. Hasek is hurt. Andre Trefilov was the backup, is hurt. Rob Stauber, who was a goalie in the American League with Rochester, has gotten shoulder surgery. So we only have Steve Shields left in our organization and you, who we just drafted this year. So I ended up going to Pittsburgh, and I played my first NHL game as an 18-year-old against the Pittsburgh Penguins of 1995-96. I mean, that team was stacked, right? Lemieux was unbelievable. Jaromir Jagr. The first shot I faced was Peter Nedved. He came down the wing on a partial breakaway. He shot it over my shoulder. It was in and out of the net before I could even react. I was stretching during warm-up, and the old igloo, the Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh, you had to step on the ice, and you would have to go to the other end of the rink for your that's where your zone was for warm-up. So I was in the warm-up in the corner, and I was stretching, and I see all the Pittsburgh Penguins kind of stepping on the ice, and all of a sudden there's a break, there's a pause, and the crowd roars like they're so excited. And Mario Lemieux always stepped on the ice, the last player out of the locker room, the last player to go on the ice. He stepped on. He tapped my pads and he says, good luck, kid.
Oh,
and
cool.
He skated away. And I see this big, like 66, no helmet, the mullet, the big hair, right? Like Mario Lemieux in 95. And I'm like, I think I'm in trouble here. So, yeah. So that was a bit of a aha moment for me as an 18-year-old, used to seeing like junior players coming down. And all of a sudden you see Jagr and Lemieux and Nedved and, oh man, they had so many guys on that team. It was crazy.
That is so cool. I remember that old rink. That was cool. That was the old rink where you dressed in two different rooms and the coaches were in one room and the
these are in the back with the, you know, the sewer pipes on top of you. And it was just an awful, awful arena. I never played well there. Maybe because it was my first NHL game and it left some scars because I gave up 4 goals in the first period, sat on the bench for the second, came back in the third.
Oh, no.
And played pretty well. But I never played well in Pittsburgh. And then I got abused by Jagr so many times. And then after that, I got abused by Sidney Crosby and Geno Malkin when I was with the Flyers. So, yeah, it wasn't a good place for me.
Well, another Jagr, I think people say he's his clone. My buddy Thomas Hertl lit you up before that one night. People say that ended your career, Marty. What do you have to say about that?
Hey, listen, he didn't let me up before. And Lundqvist started that game.
No,
and then
really?
I had to go in because we were down like 4-1 at some point, and they're like, okay, Marty, you're going to go in. And I went in, you know, cold in the second period. And, yeah, the San Jose Sharks were feeling it that night. when Hurdle came in on that breakaway and scored his fourth goal of the game, like, at the moment, I really thought to myself, what just happened? And I didn't know, how did he score that goal? Like, I blinked, and the puck was in the net. And everybody was mad on our side because the 19-year-old kid was celebrating like it was the game-winning goal for the game. And it was 8-2 at the time. I don't even remember. but, yeah, a lot of people think that ended my career. I got to play another game in St. Louis a few days later, which I did not finish. I got pulled in that game, too. But
Marty.
I knew that season was... all my stories start with I got pulled that night, and this is what happened. But I knew this was going to be my last season. I was in New York. The family was back in Buffalo. It was my last year of my contract, and leaving to go to New York was tough because, you know, my third kid, so my second daughter was starting kindergarten, so I had a fourth grader, a second grader, a kindergartner, and a pre-K. And I was going to leave for the whole season and be by myself in New York and just come back maybe a couple times a month on a day off, right? So, and it didn't start well. We had a new coach. I told you at the start, I love John Tortorella, but he got fired at the end of the season, the previous season. So then Alain Vigneault was coming in. Alain Vigneault and I had a history, and the history went back to juniors where he hated my guts in juniors. So I knew this was not going to be a really good, pleasant situation. And he tried to do what's best for me and protected me a little bit. But after the game in St. Louis, I said to him and I said to Glenn Sather, I said, I need some time to think about what I want to do here. Like, it doesn't really fit all well. And I came back and I told him I was retiring. And you know, then they brought in Cam Talbot and probably never thought about me again. So that was good.
Wow. I think you played pretty well for how long? 15 years?
Yeah, about 14, 15 years. You know, I had some really fun years in Buffalo. I played with Dominic Hasek, which was awesome.
Yeah, what was that like? Because he's arguably the best goalie ever,
you know,
right?
Guys that took you under your wing. And Dom, like, he didn't say much, but if he liked you, he would talk to you. He would make sure you... you were all good, and we sat next to one another, and he liked me, and you know, we would work together. But I mean, when you're 200 feet away in practice and the guys come down to your end because they can't score on Hasek, you know, you're getting lit up at the other end, right? So he was unbelievable as a teammate for me. What a great goalie. There was guys like Stu Barnes. I mean, he was our captain in Buffalo. He was one of the best teammates I've ever had. And then we had a good group of young guys. But, yeah, I played with Hasek in Buffalo. I played with Ryan Miller in Buffalo. I played with Henrik Lundqvist in New York. So, man, I played with some really, really good goalies.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier. What is it like? Because I feel like I know a little bit being a tough guy where you don't play for long periods and all of a sudden you're thrust into the action. But I can't imagine being a goalie where you legit sit there for 45 minutes and then all of a sudden – you're in the game, and it's not like me where I can kind of hide and, you know, go for a 30-second shift. Like, you're in the game. It's like, how long did that take to get used to? Because you were a starter, you know. Like,
it's tough. It's not easy. And when you're young, you want to get in the game. Like, you're like, put me in, coach. Like, you're down 2-0 after 5 minutes, and you're looking at the coach like, put me in. Well, when you get older, you realize that going in too cold in the middle of a game, the likeliness of you doing well is not that great. So when you see the score is like 3-0, 4-0, 10 minutes left in a second, you try to almost make you invisible on the bench. Like, I hope he never looks my way. Like, I hope I don't hear my name right here. Like, it's almost like you don't want to go in. And I know some guys are going to say, well, you got to prepare for that. But my best season with the Rangers and Henrik Lundqvist's best season with the Rangers, he played 62 games. I played 20. Torts was quick with his goalies. He never pulled any of us in any game.
No kidding.
That
That's
was the best case scenario. Like, if Hank didn't start, he knew he wasn't going in. If I didn't start, I knew I wasn't going in. I could take a break. He could take a break mentally and just not have that stress on your shoulders. So, and that was probably the best year of hockey, like goalie-wise, that we had. And Hank won the Vezina that year. We went to the conference finals against New Jersey that year, and I think we had the better team. But, you know, New Jersey and Zach Parise and those guys and Brodeur beat us. But
I was on your team that year, Marty.
I know. So maybe that was, you know, that was probably my best year, because a coach that would usually historically was quick at pulling a goalie never did. Even if it was, you know, I remember a game in Tampa, Hank didn't really have it, but I was supposed to play in Florida the next night. And Torts was like, no, he's staying in. He's got to battle it out. And Marty's playing tomorrow. I don't want to make the change. And he stuck to it, and it was good.
That's crazy. That's why Torts, you get what you get with Torts. He is not, there's no hidden messages. There's no, like, you know where you stand, and he's not going to sit there and kind of play games with you. He will tell you exactly what's going to happen. I do respect Torts in that way. I just don't think he treated me right. That's why I'm a little annoyed with Torts.
And you got the treatment like everybody when they first come in. Brad Richards got traded, you know, from Dallas to the New York Rangers, and Torts would always do the same thing. Every new guy, if you got traded there, if you sign as a free agent, whatever, he would come into you after the first day or the second day, and he'd say, like, and he said that to Brad Richard. He says, Richie, you know what? You're not in good shape. You're not in good enough shape. You can't play 15, 16 minutes a game. I can't give you 50. You're not in good shape. You know, Dallas, they do things different than Dallas, but here in New York, you're going to get in good shape. He did that to everybody that would come in because fitness was so important to him. And that's why you say you were bagged after, you know, your first practices and, you know, because practice are tough with Torts, and the pace of game and the pace of practice is really up. But once you get over that, so if you start training camp in September, you have a month to get used to it, and then the season starts, and then it's all good.
Yeah.
But if you get traded at the deadline and it's end of February, early March, you don't have time to get in the rhythm of things, and then he starts to kind of hold it against players and say, he's not in good shape. I can't put him in there. I can't play him. He's not in good enough shape. Well, you got to give the guys a little bit of that breathing room, but he did that with the superstars, and he did that with the backup goalies. He did that to me. So, I mean, that was, at least he was fair in that way, that he treated almost everybody the same way. And you talked about Marin Gaborik. I mean, he was hard on Marin Gaborik. He was hard on Brendan Dubinsky. He was hard on Vinny Prospel. He was hard on everybody. That's the way he was.
Yeah, he was hard. So you mentioned earlier, what's it like when a goalie gets pulled and you're high-fiving the goalie coming in? I've always thought that was a weird thing. I've never really talked to a goalie about it. Do you like, what do you say to the goalie who's coming in and the goalie who's coming out? Like, what's it like from each perspective?
I never understood why you're giving the guy a high five. Like, it's,
I know.
It's more like you should tap his pads and be like, hey, you know, not your night, whatever. Like, we got you. Or maybe, hey, it's not your fault. We're playing like crap in front of you, and it's not your fault. I'm going to try to go in there and do something. But the high five thing, or the tapping on the gloves, I never really got it. Maybe you tap the guy on the pad to say, hey, you know, not your fault. Sometimes you say, you didn't have it tonight. It was your fault. But I think it's, you don't even have to say anything. It's kind of understood at that point. But I never liked going in the middle of a game, because the NHL is fast. Well, let me tell you, it's 10 times faster when you come in with 8 minutes left in the second period and the faceoff is in either in your zone or even at center ice after a goal. Like, you're mentally are disconnected from the game a little bit, and then you have to try to put it all together physically, mentally, and it flies around. If you can get through the first 5-6 minutes, you should be all right. But a lot of guys that go in the net halfway in the game, they give up a goal 5 minutes in, 2 minutes in, because it's really hard to catch up to the game.
Oh, I know. I know when a goalie goes in, the coach instantly saying, let's go. Go side to side, get a shot right away. We want to put pucks on this guy like right away because he's cold. He hasn't seen a puck. He's not used to the speed, like you said. So, man, I can't imagine. So, one more question,
yeah.
Marty.
Yeah, go. Because
this is dropping the gloves, talk about the infamous line brawl and what on earth you were thinking fighting Ray Emery, who was, rest his soul. He's passed away now. I played with Ray.
Yeah.
Golden Gloves boxer, loves to fight. What were you thinking when you took your gear off and he's smiling at you? Were you like, what is happening? Take us through.
Yeah, I tell this story a lot, and people in Buffalo and fans in Buffalo always want to know, like, number one, I think I met about 150,000 people that were at the game that night. Like, there's 18,000 seats, and I talked to like 150,000 of them. They're like, I was at that game. I was at that game. I'm like, what is that? Have I met everybody that was at that game? Like, literally. But so I was maybe playing junior hockey. I was like a 17, 18 year old kid at the time, I think. And Felix Potvin beat the snot out of Ron Ekstall, right? Just bled him to death. And Felix Potvin was 5'10", 5'11", 170 pounds, and Ron Ekstall was a killer, was a crazy guy. So I always thought I could be Felix Potvin. I could be the skinny, you know, not too strong guy that will get a couple of lucky punch in. And I remember I got into a couple of, scrums with Sean Burke one year when Berkey was with Arizona, and everybody was like, Marty, don't even go near Berkey. He's way too strong for you. John Graham in Tampa Bay, I went after, I skated all the way down the ice one year, and I tried to pull him out of the pile. And I remember Corey Sarich, that was a good friend of mine, he pulled me aside and he goes, Marty, he's going to kill you. I'm like, no, I can take him. I can take him. So now, finally, I have my chance. I have my chance to go and be on all the highlight reels and be the new age Felix Potvin that's going to beat Ron Ekstall. So I'm like 175 pounds at the time, and Ray is like 230. So I know he's got the weight advantage, but I'm like, I could get a lucky punch, and maybe I sting him and he'll go down. Well, the problem is I had never really worked on fighting before. Like, I never wrestled with guys after practice. Nobody ever told me, hey, you got to reach with your left hand, try to grab the jersey by the right elbow so you can neutralize his punching hand. And then you got to kind of protect your face and try to get your right hand loose and, you know, maybe even slip it out of your jersey so you can get it loose and go.
So you didn't know anything.
When we squared off, I didn't know anything. And nobody told me. So when we squared off, I was circling around like a boxer around the ring, but I was circling on the wrong side. So when I reached in, and John, you will know, I reached in with my right hand.
With your right hand, yeah.
And I grabbed his left shoulder, and basically the bombs are coming flying at my face within like a second after that. And I was like, oh, I'm in trouble here. So, I mean, terrible technique. the one good thing is he didn't hit me in the face. He
punched
me in the
back of the head.
No, it didn't
look like he connected, yeah.
And that hurt like hell. I had a goosebump, like one of those like egg in the back of the head, like Fred Flintstone style, for literally 2 weeks. And it hurt like hell. But I was lucky it didn't connect with my face, because I'd probably still been on the ice, many hours after the game.
It's funny. That's a good story. I know. Anytime you're going to fight someone and they're smiling at you before the fight, I think you should reevaluate if this is a good idea, because that man, he was a tough kid. It was on any fought Petey afterwards.
All the tough guys in the American League. He used to fight all the tough guys in the American League. The Ottawa Senators told Ray Emery, Like, you need to stop fighting. We will not call you up to Ottawa until you settle down, because he would literally be the toughest guy on bingo and take on all the tough guys and always get in a fight. So, but you know what, though? I'll tell you this. You play hockey and you become a family in the locker room. And when Chris Neal hit Chris Drury right before the brawl happened on the next whistle, like, that was our captain. And our captain was laying down on the ice, bleeding out of his face with a serious concussion. We had lost a few guys to injury in the games prior to that. And then Lindy Ruff was a very intense coach. He's putting Andrew Peters, Adam Mayer, and Pat Coletta. Coletta was his first NHL game. I knew at that moment, like, all hell was going to break loose. So that was my chance. And if you listen to the Ottawa broadcast, it sounds like I was absolutely murdered. If you listen to Rick Jeanneret and the Sabres broadcast, it sounds like it was a tie. So, you know, you got to take it for what it is.
I'll listen to the Rick Jeanneret, the RJ one. That's the one I like to listen to. That's funny.
All right. That's what everybody should do.
All right, Marty. Well, hey, man, I appreciate it. Always a pleasure talking to you, Tim. I'm sure you guys will be talking soon.
Yeah, I'll call you in 5 minutes, Marty.
Yeah, and please put your ticket request for any Sabres game right now. And, you know, the big ones are Toronto. So if you want 4 or 5 tickets for the Toronto game, John would tell you there's more Toronto fans in the building than Sabres fans at times. So put your request in pretty soon.
And get it in early, Tim. All right, Marty, man. I appreciate it, buddy. I hope all is well. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon. And, tell the family hi.
I will. You do the same. Stay safe. And thanks for having me on your podcast, big guy.
No worries, buddy. We'll see ya.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter at @dropping_gloves for episode highlights, behind-the-scenes content, sneak peeks, and giveaways. Check out johnscottallstar.com/shop for merchandise, including T-shirts, hats, hoodies, and so much more. And please, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's so important to helping us grow so we can keep delivering the hockey content and interviews with the players you love. Thanks, and see you next time.